Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and gifts or guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Well, I mean, of all things, yesterday we did a program on jealousy. And there was more response to the jealousy program than to many of the programs we've ever done. It seems that there's a lot to understand about jealousy, so I thought I would extend it a little further today. But first, before we talk more about jealousy, let me talk about the secret for getting out of all the mental traps. You see, the way that humans are born, humans have to be unconscious. In order for them to carry on the survival of the species, we need to be unconscious. There's a biological imperative that tells males, have as much sex as you can, spill your seed everywhere. And there's females being told, entice the male, grab his seed, go put it somewhere, keep him around if he's going to protect your baby. But if you could find somebody else to take care of your babies better, do that. And this is the biological imperative. This is the genetic law. And it goes for animal after animal, plant after plant, human after human. We've been doing it for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. That humans have lived by a biological code. And the code that includes one thing, never ask why. Never say to yourself, well, why? Why should I kill the guy next door because he looked at my wife? Nope, the law just says kill him. If he steps on your turf, kill him. And of course, nowadays we've gotten very sophisticated with killing. We call it lawsuits. You know, we hire killers. We used to hire guys with guns or guys with swords. We would hire people to carry out our dirty deeds. Now we're hiring lawyers to do it. It's not just very different. Most attorneys are hired killers. But how is it that we don't ask the question, why should I follow this biological imperative? Now, this is the question about the red-necked lizards and the blue-necked lizards. There are some people who naturally are monogamous. Prairie voles, right? Little animal doggies that run around the prairie seem to be monogamous. Blue-throated lizard seems to be naturally monogamous. But the red-throated lizard and the yellow-throated lizard, not so much. So when they are suddenly polygamous or running around chasing all over the place, you ask them, you should stop what you're doing, and they don't ask why. Because they have something driving them on the inside. But many people learn to ask themselves why. Ask themselves why, not from an ethical, moral point of view, but just why. Why do we have these commands that we live by? So it seems that nature designed two types of humans, and they kind of remind me of the worker ants, you know, and the other ants inside. One kind of human lives just by its biological core, and its biological core just simply says, eat, buy a house, have babies, pass on something worthwhile, dress up and look bigger than the next animal. Stop people from competing with you. And if they do compete with you, kill them. Destroy them. Get rid of them. Don't ask any whys. Just do it. That's one group. This is the group that lives a life of simplicity because it's simply we are following the genetic code. Then there's another group of humans who say, well, I don't want to be one of those. The earth is overpopulated. I don't want to have more babies. I think I'll use contraception, or I think I'll have birth control, or I think I'll do something so as not to damage the planet further. I think I'll do something out of my consciousness. Okay, that's good. But then it comes to getting angry at people. And you ask yourself, why do I get angry? No, because the nice old biology guy says to you, just get angry. It's a threat to you. Either you're frightened or you're angry. Either way, get angry. Well, jealousy is one of those primitive impulses that we have. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be jealous, but I'm saying it is a primitive insult. It's really controlling your genetic code. It's controlling your reproduction. So why is it that some of us ask why and others don't? Right? Are some of us smart and some of us not so smart? Are some of us meant to survive and design the new future, and others of us meant to just perpetuate the old future? It reminds me of a political meeting between the Republicans and the Democrats and the progressives and all the other supposed things they are, you know, the supposed new progressive president who's going to do things differently, who doesn't seem to do much differently. Compared to the ones who are like from the Ku Klux Klan, who say, no, we have the right way to do it. You just make sure nobody's different than we are. Kill the ones who aren't different, who are different. Why do we question things? How do we question things? Well, here's what we found out, something new. We have this word called introspection. Introspection means I will stop my primitive response, my impulse, long enough to examine so that I don't react out of impulse. So you have a feeling, okay? A feeling is somebody does something and you feel hurt. Well, rather than feel hurt, or rather than ask yourself some questions, you just attack the person who made you feel hurt. This is even if they were just bringing you bad news. This is just if the mailman is delivering you a letter that says you're fired, you shoot the mailman. You know, in other words, you just have this reaction automatically. And the reaction automatically, very often, is a reaction to ward off confronting a new reality, almost invariably. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be talking about jealousy a bit more, but I want to talk about this inability to see yourself. How does it work? Well, let's look at testosterone in tigers. The problem of the testosterone in the tigers in Tasmania. I just made that up, the alliteration. The problem is that when you're a male on a hunt, you can't have compassion for the thing that you're hunting because, Jesus, look, it's a little Bambi that you're hunting down. Oh, it's wounded. Oh, it may have children, you know. Compassion goes out the window. You have to just go and kill. So you shut off the part of you that considers compassion. And you shut off the part of you that says, well, do I really have to do this? Now, there's the question. Who has the ability to shut off the reaction and who doesn't? Most of us feel the reaction and act on our reaction. And some of us feel the reaction and say, what is this reaction about? Now, there's a problem with feeling the reaction and questioning it. The problem is introspection is the word we're looking for. To means to introspect, to look inward. Introspection is basically thinking about your thinking, a way to judge your own thoughts and actions. A difficult thing to do. because you should be reacting, okay? Introspection. Do you have introspection? Everybody out there is going to say, oh, yes, I have introspection. But no, most people don't. So yesterday we talked about jealousy, and I said, let's go to A, B, and C. A is you. B is your mate. C is somebody who comes in from the outside who in some way makes A, you, jealous. So when A gets jealous, what does A do? A blames C and says, you see that hussy? She or he is trying to steal my woman away. I'll kill her. I'll blame her. Or A sees the same thing happen. They blame B. They blame their mates. See what you did? You wore that short skirt. And you made that happen. So blame replaces introspection. The third one is, oh, here I am getting jealous. I wonder what this is about. What is it in me that is feeling something? And you have two questions you could ask. By now, I've listened to Armand DeMille and The Positive Mind long enough that I know that jealousy is one of two things. It's either fear or it's anger. So now what I want to do is locate both the fear and the anger, or could be both, of course. How do you tell if it's fear or anger? Well, you know, fear feels like, it's like a shriveling. You know, when you fear, it's like a shivering, shriveling. It's like you're, oh my God, and you're kind of compressing, kind of pulling yourself on the inside. That's fear. Anger is explosive. You feel like just bursting out. You could have both, of course, both be frightened and angry. But back to introspection and what introspection is. Introspection is asking yourself, what's going on with me, not what's going on with them. And there are certain people, and I can guarantee you this is among the highest level people I know in the world, who lack introspection when they get challenged by jealousy. Jealousy is the one. It just sets off all the things. Now, not only jealousy. Let's talk about other times that it happens. It happens a lot during hormonal cycles. How many times can a woman who's having a baby say, I think I want to have more ice cream with pickles? And how is it that she knows what the ice cream and pickles are doing to her body? That's not going to be good for the baby. How is it she can't ask herself, wait, what's going on here? Because during times of certain hormonal things we've learned, it shuts off the ability to be introspective. And this we're very curious about. Because if you're someone who is menopausal, premenstrual, or pregnant, or any of the male hormonal changes that we're going to be learning about very shortly, let's say you got a drop in testosterone, or let's say you have a drop in your, or you're aging, or something like that. How is it suddenly you can't look inside, no matter how sophisticated you are? How do you keep on blaming B and C? So I've always been curious about how the most sophisticated people in the world lose track of their ability to look inside and question themselves, and they just get on the blaming. Blame, 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 blame. You. That's the way it sounds. You know, and if you're like me, you hear somebody just saying it all. That you. That's what they say to their mates. Your fault. You did this. You did that. I was fine. It's a you. So what's at the neurological basis of self-awareness? By learning it, might we be able to come up with potential strategies to intervene and improve the introspective ability? That's a good question. Here's how it works. Researchers in general can try to show healthy people computer screens containing certain patterns, but the volunteers would have to search inside to see what they feel about certain screens. Now, the brain scans done with the MRIs showed that the people's introspective ability was strongly linked to the amount of gray matter they have in the prefrontal cortex, right behind the eyes. Prefrontal cortex. The study found people who were more introspective had stronger functioning white matter in that part of the brain. The nerve fibers that act as a telephone system to allow cells to communicate with each other, we call the white matter. If you have just gray matter, you have a non-communication in the prefrontal cortex. So now we're really getting somewhere. We're saying, wait a minute, some people chemically can't make make that happen. Bolstering the findings, many studies showed schizophrenia is associated with poor prefrontal cortex functioning, and that strokes in that area can rob people of introspective abilities. That means you cannot see yourself, you cannot understand yourself. But much more research is needed to address this issue of which is coming first. The brain research to date is focused on simple questions. How it forms, how it's there. But we do know that there is a difference chemically between people who are able to see themselves and look at themselves and people who can't. And here's the one thing that we know. If you're agitated, if you're frightened, if you're in panic, you cannot see yourself. All you could do is look for the enemy and attack the enemy, which means to blame. Now this, my friends, is very difficult. Because if you blame all the time, you're going to send your mate away. Your mate's going to leave. They're going to say, I'm so tired of being wrong. There was a joke I heard recently. If a man stands in the middle of a forest, is he still wrong? Wrong. What's asked? What's asked is that you look inside you first before you react. Now, the positive mind here on WBAI is dedicated to your introspection. It is not dedicated to your blaming of people. It is dedicated to your being able to see yourself and see your reactions and not just be one of those people who are saying, we're bombed, we better go to war. I mean, how much introspection is there, you think, on the part of the people who make war? None. What do you think war is about? It may be about greed on a much bigger level, but in order to get your soldiers to go out there and kill blindlessly, you have to convince them that there is a danger. And you have to convince them there is a danger to your mother. And unless you go out there and kill one of these people with towels on their heads, your mother is going to die. You have to convince them of that. And they believe it. Believe me. Because they get together with the other guys. And the other guys say, yeah, they're going to kill my mother and your mother. And so we better watch out. Armand DeVille here with you with the positive mind. The inability to see yourself is essential. Now let's talk about psychotherapy. Psychotherapy ideally teaches you tools for seeing yourself. It does not just cure you. The ideal psychotherapy comes to you and says, or you go to them and they say to you, here's how you see yourself. And then every time you go back, the therapist asks you, well, how did you see yourself? So the person comes in and says, I'm so angry at my wife. My wife came home and she told me I was late for dinner. And she told me she was angry with me. And she's always complaining and she never stops complaining. Well, the average therapist figures the following. Look, I'm making $100 if I just sit here and listen to this person. And this person's going to just rant. And then they're going to feel good because they dumped it on my lap. And they're going to walk out and they're going to feel better. But the extraordinary therapist or the exceptional therapist would say, wait a minute, it sounds like you're making them at fault. You're including, you didn't include the I, the we, the me, the part of you that is creating this. Well, you know, it's a tough thing because if you don't do it and the therapist and the person's not really sure that they want to change, they're going to dump you. They don't want you as a therapist. They want a therapist who's going to help them perpetuate their dysfunctional way of being. So how do we do it? You have to look on the inside and try to find what you are in this drama. Let's go back to jealousy for a little bit, okay? Let's go revisit you in jealousy. There's a test called the jealousy test. Let's take a jealousy test. I don't know how we're going to score this or what we're going to do with it, but I think the question, you know what a Cohen is? It's somebody who lives next to the Goldbergs. No, a Cohen is a Buddhist concept. It basically means it's a question that you ask, and by asking the very, it's K-O-H-N, I believe, and it's by asking the question, you in a way manifest the answer. But you don't ask a question and say, and answer the question. You ask the question. I think these questions are Cohen's. So here's question number one. Your girlfriend or your wife is in another room, or your husband, or your mate. The phone rings and you answer it. It's a male voice you don't recognize, and he wants to talk to your girlfriend or your wife. It appears they're on a first-name basis. Hi, this is Frank. I like to speak to Stella. All right? How much would it bother you? It would certainly bother you. It would bother you very much, moderately, a little bit, barely, or not at all. Good answer for yourself. How would you react? Number one, I'd ask the guy who he is and why he's calling and try to intimidate him. Hi, this is Frank. I'd like to speak to Stella. Oh, yeah, who are you, Frank? That's enough. Try to intimidate him. I would ask the guy who he is and why he's calling and listen for clues in his tones and responses to try to find out if he's being sneaky. That's another choice. I would ask the guy who he is and question him about him before passing her the phone. Hey, honey, there's Frank is calling for you. Who is he? I would ask who is calling, which I usually don't, and just pass her the phone. I would pass the phone with a big question mark written all over my face. I would ask her who the caller is and would not give her the phone until she explains herself. I'd pass her the phone but would wonder silently who he might be and what the hell is going on here. Or I would pass her the phone without having a second thought. Hey, Stella, it's Frank. Which would you have picked? Now you know the same answer. A good friend of mine brings me this publication. Tells me about on publications of education for women often found in women's shelters in public bathrooms. The first question about an abusive man is he jealous? Is he jealous? Because it seems as jealousy is dangerous to tell if you're going to have that kind of thing. Okay, the question, next question. So the question is, your wife, girlfriend, and you are at a party. An attractive man is flirting with her, and she seems to be flirting back. How much would it bother you? A lot? A little? Not at all? How would you react? Talk to my partner, insist that we leave the party? I'd get up and beat the man to a pulp? I'd leave the party without telling her? Do all these other things, or you'd flirt with somebody else to get even? Afterwards, when you get home, I'd confront her and let my anger and frustration out. You spoke to this man and flirted with him, and I saw him touch your arm. I could do things that I know upset her just to pay her back, having nothing to do with the party, you know? I'd never mention it to her again because, as I see it, nothing serious happened. I give her the silent treatment for a while until she could confess what's really wrong. I'd never mention it to her again because I wouldn't want her to know that it bothered me. All of those are possibles. Okay, so here's another one. Accidentally, you find out your wife's girlfriend confided in a friend that she has a sexual dream about her favorite actor. How much would that bother you? Right? Your mate has a sexual dream about her or his favorite theater person. Extremely, very, not much, not at all. How would you react? You'd break up with the person? Forbid them to ever see a movie with this person? Calmly ask her to discuss it with you? I'd ignore it. I'd get back at her by spreading a rumor that I'm having an affair with an actress or something like that. I don't know whether we get just a couple of minutes, and we will take your calls later, of course. Your wife's girlfriend has to leave the town for 2 weeks to go on a business trip, or boyfriend or husband. How much would it bother you? Extremely, very, moderately, a little bit, or barely, or not at all. Would you call her at unexpected times to check and see if she answers her cell phone? And what if she doesn't? Would you expect her to be fully concentrated on her work and otherwise stay in the hotel room and not go out? And what do you mean you went wandering around? What do you mean you went dancing? You went to a dance club in New Orleans? Huh. And I thought you were at a business meeting in Philadelphia. No. Anyway, these are questions that kind of point up the kind of jealousy quotient that we all carry. When we get back, we're going to talk a little more about jealousy, and then we're going to take your calls. Remember, introspection is the key. You don't want to be the kind of person who just reacts. You want to be the person who has some kind of insight, the ability to look at yourself and say, what's going on inside me? Where is this biological imperative coming from? Where is the thing inside me that is telling me this crap thing? Because I've watched the most intelligent, beautiful people destroy relationships. Destroy by their own primitive responses. Destroy potentially wonderful relationships. But of course, you know the truth of it is, it can't be potentially wonderful if you're running on primitive levels. It just can't. It could last for a certain while, but it has to be suppressed. It has to be quiet. It has to be a kind of numb relationship. And who wants that? Well, some people do. They just want to get married, have babies, and, you know, pass on and die. Me, my friends, you guys at WBAI, I don't think that's what you want out of life. I think you want to be living not on the automatic, but on the part that you have a chance to control. You know, which is to evolve, to develop, to be different than your family, than your heritage, than your grandfather and grandmother. I hope so. Hey, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will continue with this discussion. Little Babel Blues. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. The telephone number here is 212-209-2900. Yep, we're talking about introspection, the ability to see inward. And it's not just about blame. Blame perpetuates it. You see, here's what happens. Let's say you're going through something, and you blame your partner because you feel fragile. Now, what does your partner do? Your partner could be very wise. Could be a guy like me. I'm very wise. But if you're accusing them, there's a tendency to defend yourself. If you're saying you, and you're blaming somebody, they're going to try to, they're going to say, oh, no, listen, no, I didn't. No, it's not true. I didn't. Look, you said this happened. It didn't happen. You think by arguing the person out of their position of blame that they will say, oh, I found out you're right. Look, your logic proved it. I am sorry. I was blaming you. No. You see, the very purpose of blaming you is to destroy you. The very purpose of blaming you is to perpetuate the grief. There is no capitulation. There is no solution. By the time you're being blamed, there's only one thing worthwhile, and that's a bloodletting. You want to kill. You want to destroy. The blame is meant to say, let's get some action going here. So it's saying, please step into this primitive world with you, with me. Please. Please be primitive with me. And you say, no, can't we be a little evolved? And they say, oh, no. You, when you, and then you, and then you. And you beg, and you love the person you're with. If you love him or her, and you love them, and you say, oh, no, it's happening. I love you so much. Please don't go there. Well, I wouldn't have gone there if you didn't, you. And you say, but I didn't. The minute you defend, that's it. The door is open. Now it's you, back to you, and you lose the ability to do it. So I guess the only way it works is with two people who are dedicated to never letting this happen. And I don't think that ever works either. Or maybe between two saints. You know, if a person's a saint and they could always step outside themselves. I don't know. 212-209-2900 is our telephone number here. We're talking about this, and we talk about it. And the reason I'm bringing it related to jealousy is one of those things that evokes such primitive emotions, and that the very confrontation of which automatically will endeavor a defensive reaction. The defensive reaction will get the person to become more attacking. Then even if you solve it for the moment, you get angry and you want to get even, and the other person is coming in for the second strike any day now, and they're watching more closely, and it's an unhappy way to live. 212-209-2900, let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
This is Herb.
Hello, Herb. Herb.
Yeah.
Herb.
I'm also Tim.
Hey, aren't you a poet?
All right, yeah. I from the rooms I hear that you take the me out of blame and you got blah, blah, blah.
Cute. You know,
so I like that.
Take the me out of blame and you got blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I like that.
It don't work like you had an old therapist, old gal, you know, talking about there's nobody to blame. It doesn't work. I remember that very well.
That's right.
Now, I want to talk about, I'm 76 and a half years old, you know, a kid will say I'm 7 and a half years old.
Yeah, I got that part. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm scared the way this country is going. There's a cop on every block on Broadway with machine guns.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, what's going on here? And what I want to ask you, other than WBAI, who can I support? What can I do?
Well,
I feel very unsafe the way this country is going. You know, listen to John Daly, support him.
Now, you know what you
good.
Need?
You, know,
you
he,
need...
He's now, gotta, telling the truth.
I'm going to tell you two different things you need. Number one, you need a massage.
Massage?
Now, yes.
All right. My wife will be in later.
Yeah. No, you need, other than your wife, to give you the massage. Your massage is good, but you need to go somewhere and get someone to massage your body, hopefully a woman. Okay? Now, trust me. Other than that, you need to feel safer in the world. And I would recommend either a small animal, like a kitten or a dog.
I got a 70-pound pointer.
Oh, how nice. Yeah. Tell me about your dog. Is your dog worried about
the world? She's wonderful. You know,
does she worry about the cops?
She raised my mind. No.
You see what I mean? Okay, so we got the answer. Point to the pointer.
All right, yeah.
And say, what's your consciousness that makes your tail wag the way it does all the time?
Yeah. Well, she loves me. She loves us, man. She's dedicated, you know. I'm the leader. I'm the pack leader. One other thing. The other day, I never saw my father. He cut out early on, and I was supposed to be the spitting image of him, Herbert Moore. Anyway, I was waiting for in the lobby of the apartment where I live, and this guy come in. Evidently, they came in from the car, the wife and the two kids he had in his arms, and they're gone. They're off. Their heads are drooped. You know, they're gone. They're snoring. You know, and I got the image. You know, I never felt safe like that. You know, yeah. It's so important for a guy to have a father figure. You know, but by just being witness to that, I got a shot of it.
And you got a feeling.
It was real good.
Well, then,
yeah.
Then I think you gave me another answer now, Herb. Listen to this.
Hi, Daddy.
Yeah, listen to this. No, listen now. I want you to go to a policeman or a cop who's standing on the corner, and I want you to go to them and say, can I get you a cup of coffee?
Oh, good.
Can I get you a sandwich? Can I get something for you? Your job is to become the daddy to these poor characters who believe it's all about danger. And don't talk to them about anything negative, and don't tell them that they're wrong.
But I'm too young to be grown up.
But you could just say at some point, how can I get you a cup of coffee? Can I get you a bottle of water? Can I get you something? Show them your heart.
They
show them what
happy.
You've got.
These cops don't look happy.
Yeah, they don't, because they're not.
Yeah.
They're not. But you could help.
Yeah, all right, good.
So follow your pointer and become the daddy to the people who are missing as well.
Very good. Thank you, Obama.
Thank you, Herb. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Armand. How are you?
Good.
I had a girlfriend in the past who was a little unstable.
Yeah.
And she had this big thing for jealousy, you know, and it was not an energy that I was that familiar with. But like you say, once she would start behaving in jealous way, it would fuel, it's as if she did it on purpose to fuel me to be jealous. And why it worked, I don't know, because I just wasn't in that realm at all prior to her in my life. And I fed right into it.
Yeah. Well, do you remember what I said yesterday? Did you happen to hear yesterday's program?
I didn't.
Okay.
I
you might want to go
time.
Back.
Yeah.
You might want to go back and listen to yesterday's program. Because yesterday I talked about a very individual thing, a very interesting thing. There's a sexual turn-on that happens with jealousy. There are people who get turned on by the very feeling of jealousy.
Yeah.
It's called zealophilia.
I did hear you say that. That's right. From zealous.
So there are people who need this jealousy to feel attracted. Like there are women I know who have said, because I know other women want you, it makes me want you more. But then those very same women will turn around and say, I'm jealous because other women want you. So it gets confusing. But it is to understand that it's not your fault if she's jealous. It's not your fault if she gets crazy with it and there is a manic kind of jealousy and there is a mania related to jealousy, which I'm going to talk about maybe even tomorrow.
Yeah.
But there is a jealousy that goes so far that it becomes crazy and you may not want to be a part of that.
I got away.
That's what I hear. I hear you said, this is a little too much for me.
Yeah, I stopped calling her, I got away from her. And you know, Armand, it's sad. I'm on the other side of Long Island now, and she just showed up on my block to buy heroin. Every day I see her two or three times, and it's so sad. Because she was an LPN, she went back, she's an RN now. She wasn't doing heroin back then, she was doing cocaine. I'm not doing any of that, and for a long time now, and it's just sad. And, you know, because she had a choice to go get help, and get herself better, whether daddy abused her or she was doing diet pills and on, or just off. And she would get people caught up in cop situations, you know, with the orders of protection and harassment. But she would never go the extra mile and charge with an assault. But she was the one that assaulted first. It doesn't make it right when a man hits back, but actually I rose above and just stopped participating. She hit me later in time, and I just looked at her, put my hands down. I said, what do you want to do? I'm just not going to hit you back just because you hit me. And, you know, I mean, I've
so there you were confronted. There you were confronted with the primitive you and the evolved you. And you took the step to be evolved.
Yeah.
And you're reminded by the world that what you left behind, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in. Thank you.
Yeah, it's quite a thing. Hey, thank you, Armand. Great
sure.
stuff.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. I'm calling. I'm new to your show, and I have a question. This really touched me. I grew up with a mother who was extremely controlling of my father, and she lucked out. Well, and I guess you could say that because he kind of let himself be controlled. But I grew up with a very bad model, and I've been separated from my husband for a year and a half, and we just reunited. And I just wanted to call because, you know, I'm finding that I'm being confronted with these issues.
How are you confronted with them?
I tend to be kind of jealous. I tend to be kind of, like, maybe it's insecurity, but my husband, for example, he has to move his stuff from Queens to where we're living now, and he wants to do it late at night. He doesn't want people to see him move his stuff. And I immediately think that it's because he's trying to hide something. And, you know, I confronted him with that. I got upset. I cried. And I said, I don't know why I have this feeling, you know. So I feel like I am evolving a bit, but I don't understand. Like, I do tend to be.
Well, here's the funny thing about it. The funny thing about it is, unfortunately, those who suspect usually are right.
Oh.
Now, here's the funny thing about it.
Okay.
The reason they're right is because they make it happen in a way.
Oh.
Because in a way, number one, you pick somebody who, when did you meet this man, this husband of yours?
We've been married since 2006.
Okay, and when you met him, was he completely free or did he have somebody else?
Well, he's from a different country, and we did have a breach of trust, but he told my father it was because he didn't think that we would trust him, which is kind of ironic, but basically he had a child, and he didn't tell me about this child.
Okay, so here's the story.
Okay.
You meet a man who says to you, I believe that I have to be deceptive, because I don't believe you will be accepting of me.
Yeah.
And you choose to marry that man.
Mm-hmm.
Something inside you says, you know, we may get close, but someday later I'm going to be able to cash in on this. Now, why would we call it cashing in on it? Well,
yeah,
because your childhood is a repetition of this distrust issue.
Yeah.
So it was almost like you were trolling. You know what trolling means when you're fishing?
Yeah.
You're looking for to catch someone who is going to repeat your past. And you pick a guy. So like, I know a lot of women who they meet a man, and the man's in another relationship where he's married. And then they have an affair with him. And then he drops the other person or leaves the marriage, and then he's theirs, and then he cheats on them. But listen, when you met him, he was cheating when he was with you. He didn't.
Well,
that's the idea.
I actually spoke with his ex-girlfriend who he has a child with, and they weren't in a relationship anymore.
Of course. But, you know, you just got it. The basic rule is, I believe I must deceive because truth will not get me what I want. Now, let's think about this.
Okay, yeah.
Let's say your husband says to you, you know, honey, it's right. I want to go out there and I want to go to bars where women dance naked. and they crawl all over me, and I give them $20.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that to you. What would your response be?
I would say that you're not the person for me.
Now, you see what I mean? So therefore, he has to say to himself, I can't, not he, I don't know if this is true about him.
Right.
You see, but where is the part of us that welcomes truth? Where is the part of us that says, tell me what true is, and I will celebrate it with you? And the answer is, if you're punishing truth, then how can anybody be truthful? It's a conundrum.
Yes.
Right from the
beginning. I'm working. We have a 3-year-old. I want to welcome him and my marriage and reunite us. And I want to let go of this, you know, suspicion. And I just
I'm not sure you can let go of the suspicion because it's really what you want. And you can't say, I'm going to trust him if he can't afford to be honest with you because you're going to punish him. I think you need to find an astute marital therapist. Astute now. There are not many I know. But there is an astute therapist who would not be judgmental, who would say, okay, let's talk about this. What is truth? What are the consequences for the truth? Let's see if we can get this completely open. I know a man recently who had a wonderful relationship. As soon as he uncovered the depth of his relationships on the outside of his relationship with a woman who said, oh, no, I just want to know the truth, just give me the truth, she wanted to dump him. And he said, but I thought you wanted all the truth. And he was willing to bare his soul so that he could have that relationship with her. He wanted to tell her everything.
And see, for me, we've been separated for a year and a half, and I did tell him, and maybe, I don't know if I should have, but I said, if anything happened during our separation, I can forgive you of that. You know, I really can. I said, so if you ever feel like something happened and you want to share it with me, I want you to know that I'm here. You know.
The truth of the matter is, if he told you some details, you might obsess about them because you got that history with your father.
Yeah.
You know, you might not want to get the details.
My mother was the controlling one. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but you would not maybe, even though you invite, and I've heard so many women say, just tell me.
Yeah.
So
I
again,
guess the best thing to do is just to, let go and move forward and trust.
No, the best thing is to find, if you're going to do it for the sake of your child, find a marriage therapist, counselor, who can be in the middle for a short period of time while you're reuniting.
Okay.
Don't do it on your own.
Okay.
It's not hard. It's not easy to look into a mirror, especially when the mirror is broken.
Okay, so if he won't go, I should still go.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, but why wouldn't he go?
He doesn't believe in it.
Let him hear today's program. Let him go to WBAI archives and press on this program. Of course he would do it. Of course, I don't believe in therapy either, actually. I conduct therapy. I do therapy. I've done it most of my life. But I don't believe in it either. I don't believe that it's as great as it's made out to be. However, I do think in some cases it's fantastic.
So WBAIarchives.com?
No. You could go there or you could go to thepositivemind.com. And the positive mind, you'll find today's show or BAIarchives.com. You hear today's show and you'll hear our section where you're on the air.
Okay.
And let him hear that. I'm a nice guy. Men don't feel bad about me.
No. Okay. Well, this is the first time I'm hearing your show, so okay, we just live here. So thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay. Okay, take care. Bye.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hello.
You know who I am. I spoke to you too a week ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I won't say my name today.
Okay, don't.
What are we exactly talking about?
We're exactly talking about introspection, the ability to see yourself.
Okay. Recently, I seen myself on many occasions, and I knew that my response to a situation or what was happening in my relationship, I saw myself, But recently, I saw so much more of myself. And I really didn't like what I was seeing, but I realized that there was this great amount of anger toward my boyfriend for, you know, some things that he had done, nothing critical. I just basically wanted my way. And so I was very angry. It was like I was obsessed with the idea of making him pay for it, okay? You know, I'm going to show him. And I knew I was acting this out, okay? And so whenever something would happen, I would be like, well, you did this. And when you're talking today about how people point to you, and I know this within my being, that when you point your finger at the person, this whatever it is takes on this whole monstrous complexion, everything gets ugly. I know this. But I was just...
But you see, this is what we're saying. We're saying that there is a part of people, humans, when they get bent out of shape, the chemistry shifts around in such a way that one part of your brain knows not to do it, and another part of your brain gets into action. I have a dear friend who always walks out. She leaves every time she gets upset. She says, I'm going to go. And because everybody who knows her says, wait a minute, that means you're upset. She says, I'm not upset. And she's headed for the door. That's what she does. She can't help it, but she's a very smart person. But so something chemical takes over, fires the amygdala, says you're in danger, and you lose all consciousness. And that's what happens to men and to women. Eventually, you get old enough that you can inhibit your responses. So if you know it... You know it. And here's the problem. Mm-hmm. When you're done with it and you've gone through it, going back and undoing it could be amazing. Going back and apologizing and saying, I'm sorry. That was wrong. That was not the biggest part of me.
Yeah.
Doing that helps undo it. So that's an important thing, too. However, don't undo it and follow it with a, but you did this and this, right?
Yeah.
It's really undoing it.
Yeah, well, that was my story completely because, you know, I would just fire away, you know, and I really wasn't proud of myself. And then I would try to come back in some kind of way. I didn't like the word sorry, but I would find a way and things would be okay for a while. But this stuff would come back again. But what helped me along, and I'm pretty much going a good week without creating any incident, okay? I'm just going to be honest with you. And because these incidents kept coming up. But it wasn't until I began to say, you know what, this is it. I had enough of this suffering. You know, we had us a good talk, and, you know, I was crying, and he was upset. And we just decided we had enough of this suffering. Let's stop this. And I don't know if the let's stop this was enough. I don't know what more took place. All I know is that it's over a week, and there has been no suffering on my part. I mean, I can't tell you what he's going through, but he appears to be happy. I found that staying in the moment,
we have to be going, but I wanted to say something to you about it.
Yes.
One of the things about it is you got to be careful about the damage you leave behind.
Yes.
Because even though it seems calm for now, sometimes you put a nail in the coffin and you didn't know it. So it's like you want to make sure that it's not only calm and not suppressed, but it's also beautiful. Maybe go buy him some flowers.
Oh, see, that's nice.
I think it might be a nice idea.
It really is.
Would you go bring him a bouquet of flowers the next time you see him? Or a flower. Just say, this is from Armand.
Okay.
Then you'll get jealous.
That's nice. See you
thanks
later.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We have to be going, unfortunately. But I could be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Bye-bye for now.